Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Layered Butter, the podcast. I'm Rodrigo Cockton.
Hey, it's Rafael Cordero.
And, you know, we have a big nerdy episode for you guys in celebration of last Tuesday being May the 4th. May the 4th be with you, Raf.
May the 4th be with you.
And, you know, we're going to do a special Star Wars episode today. Before we get started on the episode itself, we have to do some quick housekeeping items. As you may have seen on our social media, we have started shipping out the Nolan issues. So maybe some people have already received
them. It's in my hand. If
you have yours.
It's exciting. Beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I love it. I think I loved Tarantino. I love this one even more. So there you go. If you haven't received yours yet, it should be coming. You should be getting some tracking information. So just keep an eye out for that. The next issue that we have to get ready for print is Modern Horror. And to do that, we do need to reach a minimum amount. So if you haven't purchased Modern Horror and you like what you're seeing for Nolan and Tarantino, please head over to layeredbutter.com/store and purchase a Modern Horror issue. And finally, as always, if you want to support us even more for the cheap price of a cup of coffee, you can influence the way that we shape the future of this magazine by heading over to patreon.com/layeredbutter and becoming a patron. So yeah, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, join us and see something fancy behind the scenes.
It is time now, Raf, for us to bring in our guest for this week. He is, I think, the biggest Star Wars fan that I know, that you know.
100%.
That the galaxy knows. Former boss of ours, film fan, overall nerd slash great guy, Mr. John Stong. How's it going, John?
Hello, not too horrible. How about you guys?
Hello. We're doing well.
Can't complain. May the 4th be with you, John.
Oh yeah, you too. Maxi Big the 4th.
Okay. Is this like
it's getting nerdy already.
Guys, let's kick off our pre-show. There's a lot happening in the news. Number one, I guess, is more so for the big Marvel fans. They announced their new slate of movies for Phase 4, which covers the next 3 years. I think they put dates to about 10 projects and gave us a first look at some of their upcoming movies, including Chloe Zhao's Eternals.
Academy Award winning Chloe Zhao.
I think the main purpose of this was to get people in the mental state of going back to the theaters, which obviously they've taken a big hit in this last year and a half of COVID. Raf, let's start with you. I guess what was your first couple of thoughts when you saw this video?
So I know we mentioned it in the last podcast, but the moment Chloe Zhao won, I was like, okay, so Marvel's already fixing up that trailer, adding the little sizzle there that Chloe is now an Academy Award winner. But you know what? I didn't expect them to drop like this sizzle reel with kind of commemorating a lot of the films that have passed and then the next step they're going to take into the new future. I think it's exciting. I think it's a great way for a lot of movie fans, Marvel fans, to get hyped about the next stage of what the MCU is going to be doing in cinema. And especially with some of the films, like I didn't realize this, but we have Black Widow and I think Shang-Chi coming out this year. And
Eternals and Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's this year too?
You're getting hit bi-monthly from now to the end of the year.
Oh my God. See, that's insane to me. And I think this is a great way to build hype. And I love the very end of it where it says, see you at the movies, right? So it's a great reminder that, you know, hopefully cinemas will still be a thing and we can experience these big epic films the way they should be experienced.
I mean, it's a double-edged sword because I think we've kind of become a little bit over-reliant on these big blockbusters to give the theaters any type of business. But at the same time, at the very least, they will have four movies that they can make some money off this year before in what is probably an unsalvageable year anyway. John, did you have a chance to see this video?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, I don't know. Remember movies? It makes me really sad that movies don't exist anymore. And I feel like they're maybe never going to come back, you know? And it's hard, you know, it's hard not to feel emotionally manipulated when you see these images on screen, you know? I don't particularly like the Marvel movies, you know? Sorry.
Oh, Rodrigo, you good?
Just not, I don't know.
Rodrigo, you good?
And I'm so good. It's hard, you know, not to connect with the iconography and with the characters and with the big epic storytelling. And, you know, but it's a little bit like, you know, iconography, pornography, porn iconography, you know, but it's like, I don't like when it's the same over and over again. So I really like when they're original stories. And to be honest, you know, that's what I'm hoping about for this next phase. Like, you know, let's get some original stories. Let's get some style and, you know, some actual substance behind these movies. I think that'd be, you know, the best thing. That'd be the best way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The, you know, the thing that I connected with the most was definitely the, that audience reaction shot at the end of the trailer. You know, I've seen it before and hearing the audience scream, and like, that's what I really miss. So really, truly, like, I wish them all the best. I hope that they are good. You know, I just want to feel that things are important, you know, of one of these 15 movies or whatever it is. Yeah.
Funny too. Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, I wanted to say, and Rod, sorry, but I think at the very end of it, you know, when they say phase four, we see that giant four. Is that a reference to Fantastic Four? Because that's, that yeah. was.
That's the logo of
yeah, I was going to say, Four. But did they, I don't even know if Marvel really announced it yet or if it's a thing.
They had at their,
their
investor meeting, they had mentioned the Fantastic Four, but there's still no cast or date attached to it, but they have teased it before. I mean, I think to me that the things that stood out was what you were saying, John, about the theater experience of that, that shared moment. And it's like, if that was the purpose of this trailer to remind people of that good feeling. Because here's the thing. I think we do have to acknowledge that COVID was a scary situation, right? Yeah. Like one of the consequences or potential consequences of catching this was dying or seeing loved ones in an ICU. So it's like you do need to you need to make an argument for people to go out there again and try to go back to before this all happened, right? And so reminding them of things like that, that moment, that shared experience, I think it is a good job on Marvel's part. And the other thing that stood out to me is that first look of Chloe Zhao as Eternals. She loves showing that kind of South Dakota ranch vibe. Eh?
That Selma like Hayek on the ranch.
But here's the thing. Like, if she's going to do a lot of that, then I'm into it. I think the best parts of Nomadland were definitely like when she took a step back and it's like, yeah, the world is shitty, but look how beautiful nature and the natural part of the USA is. And I think like, I hope we get to see a lot of that. Like, you know, I do think that the argument that Marvel is a bit repetitive is a fair one. And so I think they're going to depend a lot on new directors being able to bring new perspectives. And from every interview that I've seen with Chloe Zhao, it seems like they did give her a lot of liberty and freedom to do what she felt she needed to do.
Yeah.
From, I guess, Marvel to an old classic, Citizen Kane has lost its 100% fresh rating after Rotten Tomatoes, I can't imagine for any other purpose than trolling, has decided to unearth like an ancient review of this movie. And now it sits, I think, at like, is it 99 or did it go lower than that?
I think it was 99, something like that.
But it's no longer, I guess, like the best movie according to Rotten Tomatoes. It has ceded its crown / throne to a modern classic,
yes.
Mr. Paddington 2. Raph, let's go to you first for this one, because I happen to know that you are a Paddington stan.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I think Paddington 2 is a modern classic. I think it's hilarious. I think it's fun for the entire family. It has a wonderful performance from Hugh Grant, who takes a villainy role. So, you know what? I'm all for it. I love Paddington, and Paddington 2 is one of those films that I feel like if you put on, anyone puts this film on and just, you know, takes the time to relax and watch this bear travel across the globe, or in London in this case, you know, they can't help but smile and laugh. And, you know, it's a very heartwarming film. That being said, though, I remember watching Citizen Kane in film school. And here's the thing about Citizen Kane. It's great. It's fine. I mean, it is what it is, especially for the feat that it did and the cultural impact that it made in, I guess, in its history. It's the way it was shot and the way it was filmed and Orson Welles' performance. But I mean, yeah, it can get 99%, sure. But I also find that Rotten Tomatoes too is kind of skewed, because all their ratings, if any critic says this film is okay, scores it like a 60% or 33 out of 5, that is a fresh rating for Rotten Tomatoes. So if 100 people say that this movie is okay, it immediately gets 100%. So it's very skewed.
I think we see it as like this movie is 99% good out of 100, but it's really like 99% of the critics said it was good, right? So it's like, it's not they're saying that it's great. Like it's a 99. No, it's
just the worth average. Watching, right? Worth watching or
yeah.
not.
Yeah. It's just telling you like a high percentage of film critics gave it a positive review, not necessarily like it's amazing. John, I know you kind of have probably had some experience with this as a former English student and like a film fan. Like what's your experience with Citizen Kane?
Yeah, I took film 101.
Film 101.
I mean, I was a film 101 at York, like everybody else, right? We sat in that room. I mean, come on. I mean, first of all, I would say that, you know, like you said, it was what it was, sure. even if it isn't is what it is, right? And I think that, you know, if you're using Rotten Tomatoes as the metric, perhaps Citizen Kane doesn't need to be the most representative of Rotten Tomatoes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if you need Rotten Tomatoes, if you're reading Rotten Tomatoes, you're like, what's the Citizen Kane movie? Is it any good? You know, it's like, maybe we don't need to worry about that, you know? And I've never seen the Paddington movies, but I have nothing against Bears. So I say,
you guys have to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have. It's funny. I have never seen Citizen Kane and I have never seen Paddington. Paddington is actually...
That's a double feature. Yeah,
here's the thing about Paddington. I have to support him because if you like speak to anyone about who's the most famous Peruvian, if you check out lists on Wikipedia, the most famous Peruvian is Paddington Bear, who is from like the dark, dark forest of Peru. So I have to support like my paisano. You know, like I need to go watch this movie about this bear, especially if it's this amazing that it's the best movie.
I wanted to mention, though, just before we move on here, I just quickly looked up the tomato meter and the audience score, right? Because audience gets to say what their pick is. Mm-hmm. Citizen Kane is 99%, but the audience score is 90%. Paddington 2 is 100%, but the audience score is 87%. So I'm kind of shook here. More people want to see Citizen Kane than my bear. What's up with that?
You don't think immediately like the film bros went in and review Paddington right after? 100%. Like there's no way
the film bros have to see Paddington 2 because it is a film bro movie. Hot take right there.
There you go.
Yeah. Shit.
Last but not least, one last piece of news for this week. Enzio Schiodi, an Italian movie poster artist, has unfortunately passed away. He made some, I guess, classics like Army of Darkness. Evil Dead, Bloodsport. So it's like this kind of very 80s looking poster where it's like you can tell that part of the vibe is like badass. And we just thought it was an important story to bring up as we are a magazine that deals with alternative movie poster. Sad times. Raph, do you know this movie poster artist? Did you know him beforehand? Do you like his art? Like what stands out to you?
No, here? I mean, I don't know him by name, but I do know his artwork. And primarily that's the Evil Dead 2, which is that close up of the skull. Right.
Yeah.
With those creepy eyes staring back. Right. And I think I wanted to mention with something like this, I kept looking at Enzio's, I guess, artwork. And there is such a vibe with 80s films. And I think this is going to go to my hot take for the later on. But I feel like a lot of these, the style of artwork that was chosen for a lot of the films back in the 80s were so, I don't know, they were so brave and they're so iconic for what it is, right? I know they're synonymous with, like, as you mentioned, kind of the action hero or maybe cult classic kind of films. But one of the big things that I saw from this article that we're going to link later in the description is that a lot of these, like, posters and the artwork, they remind me of the VHSs that, you know, you used to walk by at like Blockbuster or even at the library. And it used to bring back memories of, you know, looking through that and catching your eye with these posters. And that would be your main reason to see this movie, right? Because it looks kind of cool, right? So, you know, I guess in the film and poster world, we lost a legend. And I'm going to go into my hot take later on, but I'll save it for then. But it's about posters, so.
What about you, John? Any quick thoughts on?
No, I think that's a really great observation. I think being an internet movie nerd, it was a lot of, like you said, movie posters and Blockbuster video VHS cases. Like, so in my mind, when I would try and remember names and actors, I would picture the movie poster, you know. But as Raph said, I wasn't familiar with the name. The only poster guy that I know is Drew Struzan. I'm a Struzan slut, so I can't, you know, I can't deviate from my boy. But they were pretty, you know. Rest in peace. Whatever his name was.
For sure.
Enzio,
Enzio Schiodi. So I definitely agree there. I look at these and there's some of them that stand out. We're going to link it in the show notes, but please scroll all the way down in when you get to this article. And there is, I guess, it must be a horror movie. There is a woman getting scalped, and I'm looking at this guy, and he kind of looks like Elijah Wood. I don't know if that is who that's supposed to be or not. But anyways, check it out. You know, interesting art, interesting posters. For sure, something to think about. When we come back, we're going to tackle the main topic at hand, which is Star Wars. And that's going to be exciting. But first, we're going to take a quick break. Layered Butter is brought to you by Ola Translation, the leading Spanish to English translation agency. Pop quiz, Raph, how do you say layered butter in Spanish?
Le layered butter.
That's probably the French way to say it, but sure. The Hispanic population is one of the fastest growing audiences in North America. So if you want your product to be found, it's time to reach them the right way. And you can do that with the help of Ola Translation. Raph, guess what?
What?
Layered Butter listeners can get 5% off all services by using our special code, and that code is...
Butter!
That's right, butter. So go out there and reach your customers in Spanish with the help of Ola Translation. And we're back. It is time to talk about one of the biggest hits when it comes out to space franchise. Well, franchises in general. I would say maybe perhaps like
the essential beginning.
The beginning of all these big franchises that we're now have invading our movie theaters. Star Wars, which is obviously something that I would say most people have some type of interaction with. I'm happy that we have John here because I think it kind of puts us in a place where we have somebody that's a big, big fan. Somebody that is
the biggest,
a strong fan, which is myself. And I would say, Raph, you're somebody who's kind of a little less involved.
I'm just there. I'll watch it whenever it comes on.
Yeah.
So I want to share this tidbit before we go on because I remember, because I know I knew John was always big into Star Wars, but the moment I knew he was like the big one in terms of Star Wars was. When I saw he has the Rebel Alliance tattoo at the bottom of his cap, I remember seeing that. And this was when we were still working. I saw it. I'm like, oh, he's that serious, eh?
Yeah, it's a serious thing.
I mean, why the theater manager was rocking sexy shorts to show off his tattoo is the bigger question, perhaps.
Exactly. It was a wild west time, you know?
So why don't we get started? Like, why don't we start at the very beginning? How did you guys first interact with this Star Wars universe? Like, what's your earliest memory of this happening? Raph, kick us off. What's your Star Wars experience?
I remember watching, I don't know which one it was, but one of the first Star Wars films. And I think I watched it at my parents' movie theater back in the Philippines. And I was relatively young, but the biggest memory for me that I keep replaying in my head, obviously the Death March, the Imperial Death March score that keeps going on, that was so iconic. It stuck with me ever since I was young. But it's that shot, I think it's from A New Hope, where you see the Star Destroyer and see going over. I think we're underneath and we just follow it going towards, I think, a moon or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we see how long and how massive the Star Destroyer actually was. And I remember thinking, like, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be awesome. Like, it's going to be huge. It's going to be a step in a direction of filmmaking that I don't think was a thing back then. And this is also me being like a five-year-old being like, wow, that's so cool. But I mean,
the analytical film critic five-year-old.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, you've never seen that before, especially in a live action film, whereas when you're watching, you know, animated films, you could break those rules a little bit because you could draw what you want and then they come to life. But here it was, you know, a reality. And that was my earliest thing that I remember. I remember the score and that shot of the Star Destroyer from underneath. Mm-hmm. And as I started growing up, I was a huge fan, especially, Return of the Jedi, right? Luke in that all black and then fighting Boba Fett on the sand speeder with, what's it called? Sarlacc pit. Yeah, there you go. The Sarlacc pit at the bottom, right? And I was so pissed off because Boba Fett just went down like that. Come on. But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that Luke fought.
No, Boba, but he was there, right? Didn't he do like a backflip and then he landed there?
Han Solo pushes him off. It's not his best moment.
It was implied, John, for sure.
John, what about you? What was your first experience with Star Wars?
I mean, I come from the before time, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a pretty old dude, and things were a little bit different back then. I mean, maybe they weren't different back then, but, like, you know, there wasn't as much content, right? And there wasn't as much access. You had to really search for stuff, right? So I know I definitely saw them when I was younger, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a tape of a radio drama, and I don't think it was, like, a good radio drama necessarily. I think it was kind of, like, a not great radio drama, but I remember hearing the story over and over again, even if I didn't watch the VHSs a million times. You know, and then I think a lot of that time, you know, was in between movies, right? So it was playing with action figures or, like, filling in the stories and stuff, you know? And so I definitely know that when the box set came out in 1985, it's got those sort of, like, the black with the iconic heads kind of thing, like the Yoda and the Darth Vader. I don't know if you've seen those posters and stuff. Like, I remember that, like, being obsessed with that box image, you know, like, just looking at that stuff, right? And I do remember going to the store on, like, the launch day of the special editions and buying the VHS and getting home. So, like, it's been a long time, you know what I mean? And I think that it's, like I said, it's sort of, like, what's between. So, like, I was very into the Return of the Jedi, that same scene. Like, I really liked the, like, everybody comes one at a time and then they spring the trap and it all happens at once, you know? And it was the same as, I remember, I was thinking about it today, and I was like, I remember that, and, like, there's a scene in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where they do sort of the same thing, where they get everybody in there, and they spring the trap, and they save the friend, mm-hmm. and then they get out of there, and I feel like so many of my, you know, even if it wasn't Star Wars toys, but, like, so many of the toys that I played out in my head 1,000 times, like, it was always the, like, everybody's sneaking in, and then we're gonna spring the trap, you know? So I just remember that being definitely in my brain for a long, long, long time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, something similar, I would say, like, it's been with me since I kind of have my earliest memories of, like, film and stuff. Yeah. I do distinctly remember, like, I know that I saw these before this moment, but I guess I was a kid, so I didn't pay too much attention. Mm-hmm. And I remember a little bit older, like, my cousins and my brother talking about, like, the plot twist of, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the Star Wars movie, Darth Vader
you're going to be in big trouble in a couple minutes. Yeah, that's
Darth
right.
Darth Vader is Luke's father. So they were talking about that, and I was like, what? Like, I couldn't get the reference. So then I watched them shortly after, and I really, really, really enjoyed them. I think I'm one of the, I mean, although you guys have said it too, so maybe I'm not. So I was going to say I'm one of the few people that enjoys Return of the Jedi a lot more than Empire Strikes Back. So I think that one stood with me because, again, I was a kid, and so the Ewoks was like...
Yeah, that was awesome.
Absolutely cute. And devastating when the little Ewok is, like, shaking his buddy to tell him to stand up. And
but he can't.
Oh, totally heartbreaking. Man. So that's kind of where I remember. I do think that at some point, like, it must have been around when they re-released some of these. And because I remember having, like, box sets of this. I have seen, obviously, every Star Wars movie since. I ventured into some of, like, the TV stuff.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I would say a lot more casually than like, it's like, you know, if you ask me about Clone Wars, like, what are my favorite episodes? I don't think I could remember several, but I remembered enjoying it when I watched it. But it's been kind of like that for me. Mm-hmm. But obviously, I think we're all acknowledging that Star Wars is a huge thing. So what do you think was so effective about, like, say, A New Hope or just the first three in general, that they were able to build all this franchise on that? Mm-hmm. Don, like, you're kind of the expert here. What do you think was so effective about those movies?
I mean, I think there's something to it, actually similar to a Citizen Kane talk. Like, it's like it sort of set this template out, right? And it was very, I feel like, you know, Lucas and Spielberg are like these film nerd, like, that studied film, you know, and it was sort of like this first application of, like, this is what a good movie looks like kind of thing. And it's interesting that, you know, like you said, ever since it's been there ever since, right? It's been this big culture change for us, you know? But I also think that, again, with the limited access to stuff, like, you'd really have to go searching for this information or searching behind the scenes. And there was something, for me anyways, that was super captivating about the, like, how they do that part of it. And there's so much literature, even back then, and books and magazines and, like, of how they made this movie. And it starts off with the sort of, like, that Jurassic Park feeling of, like, how did they make this magic on screen? And it turns, I think it really sent me on that track that got me, like, so many kids in the 90s and 2000s and since then, you know, in that Spielberg sort of, like, film school mindset, feels, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, they were just, like, these 70s hippies that were just figuring it out and winging it with no money. And, like, all the things that you think are the coolest are, like, the shark doesn't work because they just couldn't figure it out, you know? So they have to be more creative, you know? So there's just something really cool about not even just the, like, you know, of course, the scale, and I'm sure we'll talk about it as we go through some of the movies, of like what the themes are and how they resonate with, you know, quiet, nerdy boys who are sad by themselves, you know what I mean, alone on the desert. But even beyond that, like, it really, I think Star Wars and then the behind the scenes of that, they really activated my film nerd journey, you know? So I think that there's a lot to that, you know, how did they make a movie so perfectly, you know?
Yeah. And I think there's parts of these movies that have not aged particularly well, but also, comma, not necessarily improved by all the stuff that they've tried to do to make it like more digital or whatever.
Oh my goodness.
But there are parts of these that are kind of timeless. Like the fact that they did like these big, like they basically built the action scene, the Death Star.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that has helped it become more timeless as opposed to I guess at the time they wouldn't have had access, right? But it's like this over-reliance in CGI that we've kind of had during these movies has dated everything that we've seen since. And it's like you go back and you see even the little trick that they had with like the titles going up and
amazing,
that being like really physical stuff, like hands-on stuff that they're doing, I think has really helped it survive like a lot of the other stuff that would have been lost with the many years that have passed.
Yeah. I'm like a generation two, and maybe you guys are like a generation three. So like I wasn't around when that was like the most groundbreaking thing. Like I've always looked at it, like you said, like I've always looked at it a little bit like an animated, you know what I mean? Like you always sort of look at it as a little bit more of a,
sure,
isn't that cute? You know what I mean? Rather than like reality. Like I never had the, like, I can't believe how real it looks moments very much in the Star Wars part, you know?
Raph, what about you from a film person perspective? Like, what stands out to you from this original franchise that made it so successful?
I think looking back on it, and again, a lot of it goes back to nostalgia, but it's one of those, the first bits of media that had this epic scale on a level that would span multiple projects, right? Especially, what was it, 1977, 1987, mm-hmm, something like that, right? 1977, look at that. for the first film to come out. And, you know, before then, I can't think of any other major medium that had multiple sequels to tell one grand story over X amount of time. And you have to see all of them in order to follow along this journey that is serialized, right?
Yeah.
It isn't, you know, we have one character doing one case per movie and it's going on to a different one, like a Howard Hawks film back in like the, you know, film noir days. But yeah, I think looking back on it, it was the first film that took that, you know, realized journey of the American Western, and then they made it into a space opera, right? They set it in space. All the characters have tropes or, you know, elements that are reminiscent of the Western, right? But George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, you know, planted it in space. And I think that really made a landmark change in film history, because around the 70s and the 60s, we had a lot of John Wayne films, you know, like Stagecoach and the Searchers, something like that. But a lot of those Western films that followed along, you know, like a rebel and an outlaw, and they're trying to make their way against, you know, usually a grand army or scale in that storyline. Now, in this case, I would say by placing it in something unfamiliar to the audience or not as common, which is space, they made a story that was timeless, and they made it feel 10 times more epic than, you know, Ringo, right? In the Western world. And I also want to say, and I don't know if we'll cover this later, one of the big things that I remember about Star Wars is the title is Star Wars, right? And it's implying violence and war, right? But a lot of the violence is either off screen or it's very, and maybe I'm just very, very, you know, exposed to a lot of violent TV nowadays, but it isn't that bad. Nah. You know, it's lasers. You have those over the top sounds when someone gets shot, like the stormtroopers. But I would say it's accessible, right? It isn't violent or isn't difficult for a lot of families to bring their kids in to see something like this. I know Darth Vader might be seen as scary, and even Yoda. When I was younger, I was like, Yoda's freaking me out. But it's accessible, and I think that really added to the scale of Star Wars culturally. So,
I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but I would venture a guess that I think a lot of that is probably also like gore, blood, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's going to add cost to your film, right? Like, it's okay, easier fine. To just, you know, I'm just saying that this. I think it's kind of like what John was saying, that it's like a product of them having to be clever about these things because they had limited options that all of a sudden it's, and even in that way, it's become more accessible, right? Like, I think a lot of these choices are almost serendipitous, like that it was lucky that things worked out the way that they did for this movie to then be able to get its place in I guess like film history.
Yeah, as much as the new ones get ragged on for what they do, like it's also intended to be sort of popular media, right? So it's like if you cut down on the blood, you get this much more money by making it PG, you know, like those are considerations that I'm sure were part of their how do we make a perfect movie, you know.
Perfect movie.
I don't know. Maybe not great. Like perfect. Yeah, perfect movie.
Paddington 2 perfect? Anyway.
Paddington 2, yeah.
I think to me also the other thing that stands out is like I would say the big success that a lot of comic book movies are having now, they owe a lot of what they're able to do to movies like Star Wars. And then you look into it and then you see that Star Wars itself kind of was based on George Lucas's love for Flash Gordon, which was a comic strip, right? And then you look at those and like they originate in like other books in sci-fi. So it's like it's kind of cool to see this almost like through thread that goes through all these projects and brings it all the way to to like our modern times, right? Yeah, so I think that's pretty fascinating.
I think there's a direct through line from 1977 to Avengers where Endgame, we are now. You know? Yeah, 100%. And for
where
sure.
Where we'll go in the future, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
So, I mean, I have a general question before we kind of leave this original trilogy. John, in your opinion, did George Lucas have a plan when he did this movie of other things? Like, there's a lot of parts that you all of a sudden are like suddenly start contradicting themselves as he's built the universe right? Yeah, so it's like, but he started with an episode 4, so he must have had some sense that this wasn't like the beginning, nor was it the end, right?
Yeah. I think he sort of was like the Tarantino of the 70s, you know? So he brings in like the stuff that he likes of like samurai movies and like these old Flash Gordon fantasies, you know? And the whole thing, I think, was him. He was not able to make a Flash Gordon movie, so he's like, well, then I'll make a Flash Gordon movie, you know? And so I think that, like you said, with the serendipity of it, I think the intention of it making it feel like one of a serial, you know? And I think there's something to Raph had said, like, the first shot is just, like, spaceship is shooting at other spaceship, and it's huge, you know? So, like, they throw you right into the middle of it, and you kind of have to, you know? So do I think that he had a feeling about, you know, Ray Palpatine? I don't think so, perhaps, you know?
Oh my
Do you
God.
Think that...
I mean, not even know, that far. Did he want Luke to kiss his sister?
You know, no. I suspect, and I mean, even if it's, you know, like in that sort of, like you said, the Western TV shows were sort of one of the templates or the Flash Gordon things. It's kind of like, you know, no matter what happens, if Flash Gordon, you know, gets married to a space princess, he's starting the next episode back at zero again, you know? So I suspect that it was more leaving enough space that you could fill it in later. And I think that he probably did have some sort of, you know, legal pad written where he said, like, dad's story was this, but I don't think he necessarily knew that they were going to fight on a, you know, volcano at the end of episode 3. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there was something there, but I don't know how much it was all, let's make it work, you know? But there's something to that, right?
So, speaking, I guess, of filling in the story later, we are going to talk about the prequels and then the movies that came after. But before we move on from this original trilogy, let's talk a little bit about Darth Vader. What do you think made Darth Vader such an iconic? I mean, first of all, two questions, I guess. One, what makes him so iconic? Two, do you think people, like, I think Vader is father in German, from my understanding. Do you think, like, German people were, like, watching this movie and be like, there's no fucking surprise here. Raph, let's go to you first. I guess, like, in terms of world building, like, what makes Darth Vader a good villain?
It's his presence, man. And I think I attribute a lot to it, to his design, right? All black, the helmet, right? Whenever he does his force chokes, right, on some of these, on his little underlings, right? You know, you don't have to explain too much about Darth Vader. And over the course of the original trilogy, they do a little bit of obviously a revelation in terms of his backstory, his relationship to Luke and the other characters and the Alliance, the Rebels and Palpatine. But I think, you know, I kind of look back at, and I know is a canon, but in Rogue One, right, the spinoff,
yeah.
He has this amazing sequence where he just shows up and slaughters everyone. And I think whenever I think of Darth Vader, I just think of this unstoppable force, right, that will do whatever it takes to get whatever he needs done or to satisfy, you know, Palpatine or whoever he needs to do. And that scene in Rogue One where the doors just open and it's just hear his breathing, right? That's all you need from Darth Vader. And I think that really adds to what made him so effective as an icon of a character and presence in all the films. And like even in you know, a pop culture today, just hearing that breathing is so synonymous to Darth Vader, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when I was younger, I had the little plush toy, right? And just having Darth Vader in my room just creeped me out. And I thought I was all powerful for having him by my side. But yeah.
I mean, I will say that I do that breathing and then people just bully me for having asthma. Buddy. While he does it. And then he gets to be a fucking
well, you deserve villain. It, you know? Yeah, exactly.
To your point, though, Raph, I do think that his legend has become bigger than he was, because if you watch Rogue One, where you see him doing all this badass stuff and continue it into like an episode 4, like in one of those viewings, all of a sudden you start seeing things where it's like, I'm not even sure that he was like the top ranking person on that ship that he was.
Yeah.
Like, no, I feel like Tarkin is giving him a lot of lip, right. You know?
Yeah.
And then even later, like in his fight with Obi-Wan and Alec Guinness, like it's like, you know, you go from this badass scene at the end of Rogue One and then he follows it up with like a fairly static, like, kind of, but it's because his legend has become so big that it's like, how could you not make him?
Yeah. I get it. Yeah. So scary, right?
John, what about you? You know, what works with Darth Vader for you?
Yeah, you guys covered a lot. I mean, I think a lot about Star Wars is not about the movie. It's about how the movie makes you feel, you know? And I think the Vader scene at the end of Rogue One is how Vader feels. But when you go back and watch it, it may not line up. Like you said, he's like, just like Tarkin just is kind of like, Steve, cut it out. You know what I mean? Like Darth is just like his name, you know? Like, so I do think that that sort of legend has grown. And I do think that there's a lot to the, you know, they talk like when they're like, Jedi named Darth Vader, who is a pupil of mine, turned to evil. Your brain is just like, holy moly, filling the blanks on that stuff, you know? Yeah. And when they're like in the second and the third one, when I do think he takes on more of that iconic role, there's a lot of just like, he's the baddest guy. And he's got, you know, it's the mask, right? So you project onto what you want, right? So like, he's the scariest to us because we project onto this mask, you know what I mean? And then similarly, what did you say earlier? Oh, just that, once you've watched the prequels to get to know Anakin, though, I do feel like there is a way to view the older movies where you can see a lot of that Anakin coming out of him, and especially when he gets frustrated and, you know, yells at somebody or like chokes a dude. Like, it's just a lot of that like bratty Anakin episode 3 or Clone Wars Anakin coming through. So again, it's like you can project what you want to on it, you know? And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity to retcon stuff with these prequels, because then you can go back and there's no base reaction, it's just the mask, so you can project onto that whatever you want to, you know.
So let's talk about this, the prequels then. I mean, if you're living under a rock after the success of the original trilogy, we went back to see Darth Vader's story, and if you know, like the episode 4, 5, 6 is the story of Luke, then episode 1, 2, and 3 is really the story of Anakin Skywalker. What worked for you in these prequels and what didn't work for you, John?
Oh man, that's a hard question.
Loaded question.
You know what? I
guess I will out you as like, you once told me that Jar Jar Binks is the true hero of the entire 90s.
I like Jar Jar Binks. You know what though? When I first met my wife, you know, she's a little bit taller and she's pretty clumsy. And I made the mistake of one time saying, you're like Jar Jar Binks. She didn't know Star Wars. Knows. All she knew about Star Wars is that this guy is a stupid idiot moron, you know? And literally, it's now been 15 years or whatever. It's been 10 years. And she still will be like that time you called me Jar Jar Binks. I'm like, no, I like Jar Jar. Like, I do like Jar Jar. I do legitimately like Jar Jar.
I will say, you have much more kindness for the Star Wars universe.
The prequels.
I think, like, for even the shortcomings of it than most people, right? So I'm sure that you said it with a lot more warmth.
I was like, I love Jar Jar, you know? And I married Jar Jar, so what am I going to do? I think that the fundamental question with prequels is any Star Wars better than no Star Wars at all, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that the reality, especially now, like maybe in 1999, you could have made the argument that three is done and that's all we need, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but like the reality is they're going to make more Star Wars, you know? So I would rather they make mediocre Star Wars than no Star Wars at all, you know? Yeah. You know? And I also think that, you know, at one point, I did this as an activity more to prove my friend wrong than an actual like study, but I went through the prequels on one of my viewings and I was like, scene by scene, do I like the scene, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Look at that, I love it, because
my argument is there's a lot more good stuff in these things than bad, you know? And I also think that as much as I really liked that start of Return of the Jedi, I think Return of the Jedi has all of the same arguments you would make about a prequel in an original movie, you know? And so if you don't like stupid characters and cartoons, like that was what the Ewoks felt like in 1986 or whatever, you know? And bad dialogue and bad romance and stuff like that all came in like the Jedi, the Return of the Jedi, you know? And like, you can maybe argue that one in like that New Hope and Empire are like perfect, but like I put Return of the Jedi as my like fifth favorite movie, you know what I mean? Like it's not... So I feel like if you have problems with Star Wars, you're going to find problems, you know, and you can find those problems in all of them, even the like the original.
I think like the lore and the universe building of it is fun. Like even mm-hmm. like the pod racing, like mm-hmm. to be honest, I even fuck with like the Gungans and the Naboo people like coming out of the end and like mm-hmm. going to war. I enjoy a lot of it. I don't disagree. I mean, to me, I think where it's weakest is in some of like the writing towards mm-hmm. the end. Like there's stuff that they like, I don't think that George Lucas is the most talented.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not to put it all on his shoulder because more people started getting involved as we went into the prequels. But in terms of like the romance of that has to be strong enough to then feel the loss that propels him to become Darth Vader. I don't know that entirely delivered for me. And I would say like even in the original trilogy, like the Han and Leia moment of like, I love you, I know, or whatever the line is, like it's cool, but mm-hmm. it's like not going to be like, oh, I need to propose to like my partner like that, right? Like it's not, that's not necessarily what's grabbing me. And so I think when the prequel became more overly reliant on that as the reason for the story to exist, I think that's where it kind of started hitting some challenges. And mm-hmm. I think also like the acting, I'm not a fan of Kid Anakin Skywalker, and it's like Hayden Christensen. I don't even know if he was a step above that, right? Hey, and it's like, I don't want to blame him entirely. I don't know who could deliver a line like, I hate sand, it gets everywhere in a way that's
just
like
about gonna, to say,
oh, that makes it convincing or good. Like, there's some choices there, and it's just like, I don't know that. Like, that's kind of, I think, where it struggles. The other thing that felt to me like a major disconnect is just the look of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, there is things in the Star Wars universe, especially in the original trilogy and in the newest one that we got, where it's like it looks like a mix of old perceptions of future, right? Like mm-hmm. you look at the technology and it kind of like, you know, like the Millennium Falcon looks so beat up, but it looks at the same time, it looks like it's technology that we don't even have yet.
Yeah.
And so they do that a lot. But when they went into the original prequels, because I guess they wanted to explore different worlds like Naboo and like the Kamino. Is that the, mm-hmm. the clone people? Like, They went into this different style and look, or it's like the ship that Kid Anakin drives at the end of The Phantom Menace. Yeah. Like they have like these perfectly smooth, pointy
stuff. Yeah, the silver like ship. Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. I think it was yellow.
It's yellow, but the same style. Yeah. The silver ship is the same. Yeah.
And so it's like, I feel like they kind of took a step outside of the universe that they had just built. And I think that they did it to portray a different world, but it just took me entirely out of like what was familiar and comfortable for me. Right. Like mm-hmm. it's not the same world where you can imagine like the AT-ATs, the AT-STs. Raph, what do you think worked or didn't work about the prequels?
Okay, guys, Phantom Menace had the Duel of the Fates, which mm-hmm. for those who don't know, is probably the second most iconic piece of music done for any Star Wars film. Sorry, but that is one of the... Oh, God, we've got him in it. No, but I mean, like it's so iconic, and that, and the choir. Oh, man.
Yeah,
we're going places now. But I think that entire moment, and also, I'm a big fan of Phantom Menace. I enjoyed it. And I think that goes back to me being a kid and then I remember my parents bringing me to like McDonald's or Burger King, and they had all the toys too. And I had the silver ship. I had Darth Maul and everything like that. And Darth Maul is badass. But again, like maybe because I'm a casual, so I don't look at it the same way as maybe John would look at it, or maybe Rodrigo as well. But as a standalone film, I thought it was fine. I get if you're looking at it from the perspective of the entire, you know, arc and the story and all the other Star Wars films as a whole, the prequels don't, you know, hold a candle to everything else, especially with the writing. But
yeah,
I do think there are some amazing moments, like that final battle in Revenge of the Sith, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Battle. Oh, sorry. I was gonna say. Duel of the Fates in Phantom Menace. That sequence where Qui-Gon Jinn gets sliced in half and he falls out scarred me when I was a kid.
What's all about, man?
But no, I still think there's some great moments. I just didn't get. You know, Rodrigo brought up a good point about, you know, it, the look is very different. And I remember feeling the same way when I think they introduced General Grievous, who had like six arms. Yeah.
And six arms and a bad cough.
Yeah. No, I mean, Grievous, man,
he's legit.
I'm sure he's legit, but like it was so different from maybe what I was accustomed to or what I expected of Star Wars. I get maybe the technology allowed them to make someone look as cool as that. So I'm like, okay, cool, right? That's fine. But it took me out of it, right? And that was a thing. Mm-hmm. Also, Jar Jar Binks going to Senate kind of... that was a thing.
But anyway. I'm pretty sure, but like, did he not propose the vote of no confidence?
That's all I'm saying. You need a heel. You need a heel to be mad at. If Padme was the one who did that, we'd be like, this loser is the one who did it, you know?
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, I feel like it definitely wasn't what we expected. And I think that especially because of that big gap where people filled in so much that, you know, there was so much expectations going into it. And people have written these stories, you know, like I don't know where I read that Anakin fell into a lava pit and that's how he burned up and turned into Darth Vader. But I knew that somewhere, you know, it was somewhere in my brain. Right. And again, on Rogue One, when they showed his like castle, I was like, how do I know that there was a castle? And it's just something that came in, you know what I mean? But I mean, I remember episode one, we lined up for 10 hours to buy tickets because you had to go and physically buy a ticket, you know? You lined up for 10 hours because we wanted first person in the seat, you know? So we did all that. We walked out of the movie and I looked at my buddy and he was like, well, that was shit. And it was the first time in my life that I even thought that, do we not like Star Wars? You know what I mean? Like, I was like, it never even occurred to me we could not like Star Wars, right? And I remember walking out of episode one being like, oh, somebody's not going to love Star Wars? I don't understand, you know?
Yeah. I think, too, it's just like product of the time that it came out. And I think we were like really excited about what we thought CGI looked like. So it's like, if you look at the monsters that they face in Geonosis, I think, is that where they did like the gladiator scene?
Yeah, that's right.
Or like even Jar Jar himself, right? Like, I think at the time we were like, yo, this is so crazy how they did this. But then we look back now and it's like, that's the part that has aged the worst, like the CGI. Even when you go back to the original trilogy and some of the stuff that they did later, there's this character, I think Sice Noodles is her name, like the singer.
Yeah, Sice Noodles.
Yeah, and so she, like, I mean, her song is a jam, by the way, if you have not heard her song, you can find it on Spotify. No, I'm joking. You can't, but it's like, you know, like, she looks worse than something like, for example, Salacious B. Crumb, who's like
a puppet, right?
Yeah, so it's like, that stuff has like, stood the test of time, whereas, like, the CGI that we saw a lot in the prequels has not.
I don't know. I mean, remember that's 1999. Like, go look at a 2002 CGI and, like, I don't know, you know, like, look at that first Harry Potter movie, you know what I mean? That was like a couple years later. And it's like unwatchable, those trolls and stuff, don't you think? I don't know.
I absolutely think so. But I think that, like, the monsters and, like, I think all of that era of CGI
is not great.
Like,
and people laughed at when Yoda was bouncing around and stuff like that, you know? Like, it was hard not to be like, that's weird looking, you know?
Very weird.
I think, go.
No, I was just going to say, but like at the time, it's almost like when Avatar came out too, like in 3D was like this amazing new thing. Like everything seemed like a good idea. And it's only like 20 years later that we're like, was that a good idea?
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you going to say, John?
Just that the other thing is that we built up Yoda and Obi-Wan as being these like ultimate badasses and like the Jedi must be the best. And they cast Sam Jackson, so the Jedi's are the best. But the whole point of the original prequels is that like Yoda and Obi-Wan failed, you know what I mean? And like they had to learn that hard lesson, like the Jedi were wrong. And like, so it's hard to watch this prequel where you know, the stormtroopers are kind of the good guys for one of them, but also, you know, the Jedi are morons and like, you know, the Emperor's around and Vader's a good guy and a bad guy. Like, it's, I don't know. I thought it was really interesting that, you know, we think back to like, who do we want Obi-Wan to be, you know, and he talked about a Jedi named Darth Vader and a pupil of mine who turned to evil. But that was like a lie that he told Luke. That's not what actually happened, you know? Mm-hmm. And similarly, you know, Yoda plays himself off as a loser, like hermit idiot cartoon for
a little bit. We're calling it?
Well, like that's when he starts off being like goofy and he eats his food and he's like bouncing around and stuff. And then when he finally goes like, Luke's not ready, and he starts talking to the ghost of Obi-Wan, and you're like, oh, he's been like playing a character, you know? And so I think both of those guys, you want them to be these ultimate heroes, but like the movies have to end with them going into exile. And I think that it's similar to when we talk about the sequels, the way people didn't like what Luke did. It's like, he has to have lost and been wrong so that he can learn the lesson. So that, and it just is backwards because you're used to it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that part. I think like there are parts in the prequels that I almost wish would have been explored more. And I know that they have kind of like in the expanded universe, but it's like in that last movie when, say, Anakin is killing the younglings.
I was
like,
just about to bring that up.
That doesn't hit me hard. Right? Like, I have no emotional connection to that. But it's like when they do execute Order 66 and you start seeing like all these Jedi and
you're like massacred.
Get it massacred. I mean, like, that is like that. I feel equivalent. Like, that was a movie making me feel an emotion equivalent to, say, like Endgame and like that kind of thing where it's like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. Moment. Like, what I'm seeing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that like it has some pretty strong moments. So, I mean, to dismiss them entirely is kind of ridiculous, I guess, is where I land.
Buddy, that Order 66 and the younglings being slaughtered, that's like the biggest moment. And I thought that is when I'm like, oh, George Lucas is serious.
I mean, I don't know. I don't have kids. I don't like kids. So
I was like, interesting. I think that I was always, you know.
Ron, what is this characterization, Ron?
Come on. I don't know. I have a nephew who when he was about 12 or 13, my brother introduced Star Wars to him and he watched it chronological order, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And having him go through that process was really interesting because he was really sad because he liked Anakin a lot. Like he watched the first one when he's a little younger. So he really liked kid Anakin. And like you said, you don't know the kid's perspective necessarily. I always thought it was really interesting because he was really hurt that Anakin turned into Darth Vader. Like he sort of intellectually knew they were the same person, but he didn't really understand it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then when they got to Return of the Jedi and Luke came in with his black getup, my brother said he paused the movie and like left the room. And he was like, I don't want to watch this movie if Luke turns to the dark side. So he got this extra layer because of the prequels where he was the whole like Luke teasing to the dark side. Like, when I was a kid, I was like, Skywalker's not going to be a bad guy. Like, what are you talking about? Wasting my time making me think he's going to turn bad? He's not going to be bad. He's Luke Skywalker, you know? By the third one especially, you know? But because of the way that the prequels had this tragedy of Anakin Skywalker and these hard choices that he had to make, my nephew was like, if Luke turns bad, I'm going to be really sad, you know? Like, I don't want to watch these movies, you know? He had to sort of not spoil it, but be like, trust me, you know? And so, I don't know. Yeah, I think there's a lot to it for sure.
So let's move on from the prequels to the sequels, I guess, and then this new trilogy. Let's start off, I guess, just real quick thoughts on, I guess, J.J. Abrams' attempt to revitalize, I guess, the franchise. I don't know exactly how you guys feel about the J.J. Episode 7, I guess, The Force Awakens. Raf, let's go to you with this one. I'm guessing that you did see this in theaters, big blockbuster of our time.
Did we watch it together? I don't know.
I'm probably assuming. I don't know what we've seen or haven't seen together at this point, almost everything.
We had to have,
I think he was the right choice for the job at that time, right? Because he had a lot of hype behind him, and I think he was probably the biggest name in to succeed Steven Spielberg in the term of his filmmaking and his style, right? And with the lens flares too. But no, I just thought visually this was a great pick for him for Lucasfilm and I don't want to even say Disney because that wasn't even a thing yet at that point in time, I think. I don't know. But anyway, for JJ to have that, I think that was great. I think The Force Awakens was good, but it did feel like a rethread a New Hope, right? Mm-hmm. It had those elements and it had the feeling of, hey, I've seen this before, but I guess it's just in different, you know, different characters and different molds, right? But I do want to say, I think they were doing something interesting with The Last Jedi. And I think they screwed it all up with The Last, obviously. But I think that comes in with, I guess, Kathleen Kennedy's decision to bring back JJ, right? And I think, but we'll get, I know. You're going to throw me off a bridge here.
I think I like JJ Abrams is overly reliant on nostalgia and telling 100% these stories again. Yes. It's like the same. He kind of did it for Star Trek and it was cute. And then he kind of did it with like the Wrath of Khan and whatever his
movie. He also did it with Super 8. Super 8 was all nostalgia.
And then he did it again for Star Wars. And it's like, I get it. Like, I do think that part of it, you do need to hit those notes for the fans that have been loving this since like 1980s, 1977 or whatever, whenever they started. Right. But it's like at some point you have to break away and tell your story. Like to me, I think from the get go, like that you had just seen the success of like ending, say, like episode 6 with like them finally winning. And then like you start off your episode 7 with like, oh, wait, no, we're back in it. We had nothing has changed in all this time. And then it's like the Starkiller base, like it's too similar conceptually to what we've seen. So it's like that to me is where it fell flat the most. John, how did you feel about The Force Awakens?
I mean, I loved it the most when I saw it and like it less the more I watch it. And Last Jedi is the opposite, where I kind of like liked it a lot. And I've liked it every time I watch it, I like it more, you know? When I saw that first Star Trek JJ movie, I was like, so mad, because I was like, that's what the new Star Wars should have been. You know what I mean? Like, this guy just made a great Star Wars movie and it stars Captain Kirk, like, unacceptable, you know? And I was like, and I knew, because like, you know, we're in the exhibition industry, but I'm like, he's not going to be able to make a Star Wars movie now that he's like, even if they made it 10 years later, he's now the Star Trek guy. So like, they're not going to give the Star Trek guy from Paramount Disney's Star Wars, you know? And then they did, and I'm like, oh, okay, perfect, even better. You know what I mean? Like, I was good with that, you know? And I think that the first 40 minutes of that movie just bang on so quick, and they're fun, and like, Han comes back, and like, that's the most life we've seen from Harrison Ford in his life, right? Like, maybe even more than 77, you know? But definitely in 20 years, he's stopped grumbling, you know? And he was running around the ship and pointing at shit, you know? Yeah. So I love that stuff, and I really, really like the new, like you sort of said, you know, I think that Lucas, and that turned into Star Wars, like, I think Lucas especially treated his actors as an asset, you know, and as long as they were on their mark and they said their lines, he didn't really care about how it was delivered, you know. He was like, good enough, let's go next scene, you know what I mean? So it's all about the actors, and so the, you know, the charisma of Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill is what carried those first ones. And I love the kids in this new movie, you know, like, I really, really like Finn, or I liked Finn, because they kind of did him dirty as the movies went on. But like, that first movie, I liked Finn. I really liked Rey. I really liked Kylo, you know? Poe is pretty cool too, you know? And like, music was great. Like, the music was, like you said, it's nostalgia, but it was like great, you know? And the Han stuff, nostalgia, but great, you know? And I knew that they were probably going to, spoiler alert, kill Han Solo, and then they did, you know? Yeah. But I do think that the sequels lack a little bit of the audacity and heart of the first ones, and I definitely think that being from Disney, like, we're not, it's not an underdog anymore, so we're not rooting for it. And so I just think that, like, you know, that's a bummer. But then the other thing is that, like, and especially when people start slagging on Kathleen Kennedy, I don't like hearing about it, because like, they're the most profitable movies of all time, you know what I mean? Like, they're the most successful films of all time, so like them or don't like them, you know what I mean? Like, because you're a nerd from the 90s, like, I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But I really like him.
And I think in terms of like nerd rage, that's a perfect segue into The Last Jedi, which I also, I think I heard you say this, but it is also, when I saw it even, it was my favorite of these new ones and I really loved it. And watching it again, like, I appreciate it even more.
Yeah.
I think, now my question is, should this have been the way that they did it, in the sense that it didn't seem like they were even agreeing with what they wanted to do with this trilogy? Perhaps not. But I do like that. I'm guessing his name is Rian Johnson. I feel like the I Rian, instead of the Y always.
Yeah.
And so I think he had kind of this bravery to say, like, we're going to like start, tell a story. Like, we exist in this universe, but we're going to let go of all this baggage that we have. Right.
Let's
and like allow these new characters to do this thing. And it's like, even the scene of like the poker world or whatever, the casino world that they go to, and it feels like a failure. And then you finish the movie and you see that like their influence ends up like giving this kind of hope to these people that didn't have it otherwise. Yeah. And like the force is starting to awaken even in these people outside in the universe. And it's like all of a sudden you're opening up all these possibilities. For and sure. Then like you get into the third one and then you're closing them back up to return.
No,
it's like, so like the whiplash, I think, is like the worst part of these movies, like that they didn't agree with what they wanted to do. And I think even like Ryan is also responsible for this, because you look at a character like Snoke, and I don't know what the plan would have been originally, but like, you know, he got killed pretty fast. And like, it, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think at some point, you, even if you think that you're like, we're going to like, you know, blaze that old trail and start new and like do some cool things. Like you kind of have to, like you've asked people in the first movie to look at this character. So it's like, tell some type of story, right? Yeah. Like even if you want to distance it from like the old stuff, like find some way to say something that like, that's, I think my biggest complaint about The Last Jedi is that I think it had the right instinct to separate itself from what we've done before, but it's like, you just made us watch this, like whether or not it was right, we saw The Force Awakens and we were kind of there. Like it seems like it went too entirely in the other direction for me. John, how did you feel about The Last Jedi? You know what, go ahead, talk about like the Skywalker,
the dismiss the Skywalker movie so much, the Rise of Skywalker so much, but yeah, I think that The Last Jedi is possibly the best film in the Star Wars saga, you know, like, and it's, you know, other than if someone said that their favorite movie is Star Wars or Empire, I feel like The Last Jedi is the only one that I would accept someone saying they like better than those two. You know what I mean? Like, I know everyone has one or two sort of as the top two typically, but it's good. I really liked it. I think that Kylo Ren is the best character in the Star Wars saga. And I feel that if I was in charge, I would have nominated him for an Oscar for that role, because he was, every scene he was in, I thought was amazing, you know? Maybe that's a hot take. I should have saved it, but I think he killed it, you know? And I do think that
he's not some no one, right? Like Adam Driver is a good actor that they brought in to play that role. Like, it's
coincidental. I snarked at it, you know, when they cast him, I was like, oh, come on, the guy from Girls. Like, I only knew him from Girls, right? And so like, I don't want to watch this Weasley dude grease it up on the screen, you know what I mean? But I was like, maybe they'll make him a lizard or something. Like, I didn't know if he was going to be a guy or not, you know? Like, he's kind of got that body, you know? So I'm like, maybe they'll give him a head. But yeah, I think that,
oh my gosh.
But I do think that, you know, and like you said, that the Finn going on a prequel side story in the middle was not my cup of tea necessarily.
Right.
But it's a Star Wars movie. So like somebody's going to go into a cantina and beep boop a bunch of aliens and ride a CGI alien. And so, you know, I'm glad that they did that. Like, and it's not that bad. It was okay. There's a lot of okay stuff, you know, the red scene is like iconic, you know, and that one, again, if you do the scene by scene stuff, I think there's more good stuff than bad stuff. And I think that red scene could be up there with any of the other movies as like the coolest goddamn thing I've ever seen in my life, you know?
What about you, Raph? How'd you feel about the new ones?
I think they're okay. I mean, I just think they did the wrong decision by closing the doors that Ryan possibly opened in The Last Jedi. I do think that Ryan did a lot of really cool stuff in The Last Jedi that I didn't think they would do. Laura Dern sequence with the lightspeed.
You're right. You know what? Amazing. Yeah, that was another one.
That was a big moment that I thought, I didn't think they would do something like that. But also the way they did it visually was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I think also if I remember in the theater, there was no sound when they hit.
Yeah, it's silent. Yeah, 100%. Beautiful. It was different amazing. Than anything else.
Exactly.
And they jumped and you're like, it's not even that I didn't think they would do it.
Yeah.
I never even thought they could do something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I never even thought about it. So that's the originality that we miss from those original stuff, right? You know?
And I think Ryan opened a lot of those doors, potentially, 100%. Even in the sequels. I think the end of The Last Jedi, if I'm not mistaken, is I think they're back in that cantina world. And then the one kid has like a broom and you kind of see it like move broom or something. Boy. And I was like, whoa, here we go. It's something interesting, right?
Yeah.
And I think they're going to go to these places. And then sadly, I think with the Rise of Skywalker. Oh my God. Yeah. They just bamboozled everything, I think, in my opinion. And I just think by bringing back, I think they hired Colin Trevorrow, who did Jurassic World.
I'm so glad that never worked out, but yeah.
I mean, we ended up with
it might have been worse too, for sure, but, right?
But
yeah.
I just feel like Kathleen Kennedy or Disney or, you know, Lucasfilm should have gotten these directors and given them the opportunity to build those storylines separately, I think. Because mm-hmm. I think it's unique to start with JJ setting the tone, building nostalgia. Then you bring mm-hmm. in Ryan, who did something amazing. They carried over that storyline, but, you know, I think made it better and had some great mm-hmm. moments. Mm-hmm. And then to have JJ come back and be like, okay, let's keep this simple and just do this. And it wasn't the way everyone or the way Ryan was maybe building. Maybe that communication was also terrible between these two writers and directors. I know Colin was in there too. But I think it would be interesting to see what would have happened if Colin took over and finished the story that potentially Ryan began. And hopefully, you know, it would have been something super interesting and we wouldn't get that Rey was a Palpatine because what the hell? I do want to say, though, and I'm trying to read on some stuff here, but I don't know if Ryan is still doing a Star Wars trilogy, right?
I don't know if they know. They said recently. Like, I think that they want, I think there's an intention to give him something, but like they can't say it out loud right now because I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I think it'd be interesting if he does something by himself because I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
Right. But let's see what happens. I don't know if they're going to do that because maybe they don't want to take those risks that he potentially opened up. You know? Yeah. Also, that scene where all the speeders are going through that world and then with the red, right? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Beautiful. Gorgeous visuals. That trailer too. Anyway.
Yeah.
I digress.
Yeah. I think The Last Jedi is a very strong movie. I know there's a lot of hate for it out there, but I just think you're wrong. If you hate it, like you definitely
have problems. need to
give it. I mean, shout out to Andrew Perucho, who is the biggest hater of this movie.
Oh my gosh.
Was he sleeping?
Probably.
Yeah.
Then, obviously the third movie came in. I know, Raph, you were talking a little bit about how Rey ended up being, I think, like the granddaughter of Palpatine. Like,
yeah, is that man. The Palpatine vibe? Palpatine Why? Bangs, you know, he never knew.
Yeah, that was a big thing.
Was he banging
thing.
On that crane? What's
Get
the situation?
Sheave. Oh, my gosh. Man. Oh, man.
And then, obviously, it must have been also affected by the fact that Carrie Fisher passed away between Last Jedi and the Rise of the Skywalker, right? How do you feel about where it ended? Like, where we are now? Like, do you think there's more coming? I mean, obviously, we have seen TV shows since, but it's like, in terms of Rey's storyline, is that kind of it? Do they need to jump forward to do another one? Like, what's your thought, John?
I mean, I think that I'm sad about The Rise of Skywalker for now, but I do think there was a lot of really good stuff in it, you know? And I do think that the scenes with Yoda, like, I was very unprepared to see Yoda come back. And the way that he talked to Luke was, I think that was an excellent top 10 scene too, you know?
Interesting.
It was great. I really thought that the message of that scene was amazing.
Yeah.
It just came from a different draft of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, I think that he's got, I wrote a monologue down somewhere. I don't know where it is. I'll see if I can find it later. But yeah, I think that when he's like, you know, that we, you know, our failure has to be passed on and that they grow beyond their teachers. Like, I thought that was what the movie could have, should have been about. And then maybe wasn't, you know? I felt like a lot of it was just like, let's go bigger. Now there's 10,000 ships and they're manned by ghosts and they're going to come out of the ground. And you're like, what the hell are you talking about right now? Yeah. You know? So I want to like it a lot more than I like it. There's lots of stuff in it that I do, you know, like about it. I like that the Revenge of the Sith comes from the attack of a clone of the Phantom Menace, you know, like it's sort of like it made delivered on the promise of the prequels. And I do like that it tied back Palpatine together, you know, but you know, like she kind of just.
When you started this trilogy, were you expecting Palpatine to still be here?
I don't think anyone was, buddy.
No, I wasn't necessarily, but then it's sort of like if you know, the reason Snoke was kind of like a punk is because he doesn't matter. He's not, and he was a punk, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like you sort of let go of that part of it, you know? But I also think that like if she was just a clone, like maybe that would have been easier. Cause like, or if her dad was somebody, like, you know what I mean? Like,
with importance or something.
Yeah,
or
you know,
was no one, and you open it,
and to, that was like, also fine that too. It's like,
you could fix this later.
Just, it's special. Like, yeah, it's not about who you were; it's about who you are, right? And then the thing about the Rey.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to answer your question about Rey. Is that I think that in the same way that the Clone Wars is able to salvage and enrich the prequel trilogy, and I really do think that, like you said, watching those Clone Wars movies informed how you watch the prequels and makes them better. I'm hopeful that there could be a Rey series, or there could be a Palpatine, you know, series, or there could be a some sort of expanded universe show or something that gets us to there. And I have faith that, you know, especially we'll get to it in a minute with the Mandalorian, but like with Skywalker coming in there, like there's an opportunity to put Skywalker from who we think he was to who he ends up being. And I don't think that that movie's unsalvageable. I just don't like that they're like, I don't know, somehow Palpatine came back, you know, whatever. Next question. Let's keep moving forward. Yeah. So like if they can fill out some of that stuff, you can forgive the movie that just kind of glosses over it. You know what I mean? So it's possible, but it is kind of a bummer right now. And it's hard. I've only watched it. I don't even know.
I've only watched it one time.
Yeah, you know, and like that's all of the other movies I watched.
I like John was about to say like 20 times.
I've seen it. I think I've seen it. I've probably seen it 5 times probably. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like I've seen the other ones 12 times in theaters. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, no. So it's different. It's different.
And it's sad that it kind of ends on a bummer note for now, at least. But, you know, we kind of ended the main stories with all those. There were a couple of extra ones. I wanted to get your quick thoughts. I know we're going a little long so far, but like quickly, how did you guys feel about Solo and Rogue One? You talked a little bit about Rogue One earlier, Raf. How did you feel about Solo?
I've never watched Solo.
Good for you.
So, I thought, what's his name? Holden. Oh my God. I forgot his name.
Which one is it? Ansel? I don't know which one it is.
Alden.
Yeah.
I think he has the look, but I don't know if he has the
Ansel.
but I don't think he has the charisma.
No way. He's great.
Yeah. So I don't know. I haven't seen it to comment too much and to say anything about that, but,
what about Rogue One?
Rogue One's great. I think Rogue One's fantastic. I just think, you know, there was something about the ending. I think everyone dies, right? Which I thought was pretty cool. And I thought they would leave the door open for other sequels Rogue Two or something like that. I think the entire concept of Rogue One was awesome, right? I think put the focus away and from the Jedi storyline and focus on like a bunch of rebels trying to sabotage or like do it as a heist film, which I think essentially it was, right?
Yeah.
Which was awesome. So I would be down to see something like that and or a more standalone films, right?
Yeah.
That take place in the universe. So I thought that was great. And that final sequence, guys, that Darth Vader sequence.
The Darth Vader.
Yeah, but
I think the cast of Rogue One is perhaps the best of any of these movies. Like, I think absolutely stellar.
Riz Ahmed is in there, too. Whoa.
Riz Ahmed, Forrest Whitaker, Diego Luna,
Felicity Jones. Diego Luna, man, getting his own show. I love Diego Luna.
Yeah, he is.
Great. Cash and Ander. John, how did you feel about these extra movies, these bonus movies?
I mean, I didn't really like them both on first viewing, and I like them more as I watch them. I think that I like Solo better, which is, I put Rogue One as my second worst.
Hot take.
Yeah.
Like Rogue One. I mean, maybe we can go through our rankings at the end or whatever, but like, I was not super impressed with Rogue One. I really liked the Darth Vader scenes, but I also felt like, again, you were saying like, wouldn't it be interesting to have individual stories that are not Skywalker stories? And then they kind of crammed in 20 minutes of Darth Vader throughout the movie. I was like blown away when they were like literally Darth Vader. Like, I love that it ends with Darth Vader seeing the ship from the New Hope, because it's like, that means that 5 minutes later he gets on the ship and he's like, where's the plans? And they're like, we don't have the plans. He's like, bro, I saw you 10 seconds ago.
Yeah.
Give the plans to this chick. Like, give me the plans, you know? So I really like that part of it. Mm-hmm. I think that Solo was a bit of a mess, and I think that it's kind of like you said, I think that the scene where he is in the train station and they're like, what's your last name? And he's like, I don't have a last name. He's like, oh, so Han Solo, like unforgivable. You know what I mean? Yeah. So as much as I like some of the other parts of the movie, I feel like that scene was unforgivable and kind of ruined it. I did not want to watch a 22 Jump Street style comedy starring Han Solo. I think the best thing the prequels did was not have Han Solo in them. And when I would argue about the prequels, one of the things I said was like, how easy would it have been for like them to show up and some 7-year-old kid shows him how to hotwire a speeder, you know, and it turns out his name's Han, you know, like, and they didn't do that. And then they make this Solo movie and it kind of does all that stuff, you know, but I really liked the kid that played Han Solo. I really liked Childish Gambino as Lando. I thought that was really cute.
Oh yeah.
I thought a lot of the style was really nice and like
the one thing that I noticed more than others, like Star Wars fills the frame with bullshit, you know? And so even when it's Khaleesi talking to him, like about Khaleesi. Who knows what, you know, like they're talking about stealing some power thing to supply the crystals to whatever. I don't even know. And I'm a Star Wars nerd and I don't even know.
Yeah.
But like they're doing it in this room with all these guys and doodads and things on the wall. And like, I think that some of the new movies like forgot about some of that stuff. Like that's what makes Star Wars different is how much full the frame is and how much cool things there are to look at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'll echo everything you guys said. The only thing I would add is that I think the guy that plays Chewbacca, which is like some super tall Swedish dude, like
that's Junus big, something, I think.
Yeah, that's a big get for them. I think good job finding.
Yeah, he did great. And to step into those paws is like a big deal. Like I always was like, you know, if it's not, you could always tell when it wasn't Peter Mayhew's eyes behind the Chewie. Mm-hmm. And this new kid's great. Yeah. And I know, again, you hate kids, so you wouldn't know, but during COVID, they did a couple of like book readings where it was like, you know, the girl who played Rey read a Rey story and the guy who played Chewbacca read a story. And like, he seems like a good dude. Like they all seem like good dudes. You know, the whole cast seems really cool, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, John, why don't you give us real quick your overall ranking of the Star Wars universe for the fans?
Bottom to top or top to bottom? What do you think?
Bottom to top. You have to give it, like, you have to build up some excitement.
I think that The Attack of the Clones is the worst film. I do like the last 30 minutes or so, but I put that well at the bottom. Mm-hmm. I think Rogue One is next because it's just not my tempo. I don't really like it that much, and I don't really like those characters, you know. And so
more Jedi,
you know, not for me. Rise of Skywalker next because it was a disaster, and then I think there's a pretty big, medium sized jump to Solo, which I would put next.
Mm-hmm.
Force Awakens after Solo because I like it, but now we're in like really good movies, I think, you know what I mean? Like, and what are we at? That's Phantom Menace is my sixth favorite film because I enjoy the Phantom Menace, and I think that the Qui-Gon Jinn and the Darth Maul stuff is like top tier Star Wars stuff. You know?
Is there an actual Phantom Menace in the Phantom Menace?
Yeah, Palpatine's the Phantom Menace, you know? Oh. He's like always in the background. We don't know what he's... Palpatine is the Phantom Menace, you know what I mean? Cool. Like, he's the man. He's the guy.
Yeah.
Top five, I would have Return of the Jedi as my fifth favorite Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
Revenge of the Sith, I like better than Return of the Jedi for the most part. I think The Last Jedi... Again, The Last Jedi is my top three. And I don't know if maybe in a couple of years it might overtake a couple of these other hard hitters. It you know what I mean?
Number like one.
Yeah, you know, Empire Strikes Back and then New Hope is the number one for me.
I'm foundation on which it's built.
I'm not metal enough to call Empire my favorite movie, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I think I disagree with almost everything you said in terms of listing. But I think you're probably more informed. So maybe people should trust your take on this.
No, I think Star Wars is all about what you put into it. And I think that like the best parts about Star Wars are in between the frames and in between the showings. And like a podcast like this is great because I miss fighting about this stuff on the internet. You know what I mean?
But you know what? I miss fighting with people who
that
want
I love.
To put
yeah.
more thought behind it as opposed to being like, fuck you, it sucks. Like, I'm not going to argue with that.
I have a lot of time for people to fight about what your favorite Star Wars is. I don't have a lot of time to fight about what your least favorite Star Wars is. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, let's just enjoy what we enjoy. And the biggest shift in my nerdness with my age is that like, I used to find it very, very important to what was canon and what was not canon. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I used to complete my collections. Like, I did not like having a box set that had six out of the seven, you know, whatever, Police Academy movies or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's not okay, right? Yeah. And so letting go of some of that stuff and being able to say, like, oh, that wasn't for me. Maybe I'll watch it again in a couple of years, you know, rather than being like, it is so important and critical that you know that this is the most important movie to me.
Yeah. And absolutely, I think that that's also like one of the biggest joys that I have received with age is the ability to fucking let go of shit. Because it's I saw a friend of mine tweeting something about like 10 Marvel movies. Like, they're crazy. I can't watch something about like, how dare they make me watch this? It's like, let it
or don't,
like,
bro.
If you don't watch it, exactly. If you don't like these movies, why are you watching? Like, why have you watched 30 movies of the same type? Just let it go and go watch a movie that you will enjoy. Like, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, on that positive note, where we'll call it for this part. When we come back, Raph is going to have a film club recommendation for you, and we're going to have our hot takes.
Raph,
Do you know what I'm a big advocate of?
Video?
Video. Established in 2010, Big Pig Co. has grown from a one-director production house to now working with some of the biggest brands globally. Above all else, Big Pig aims to produce work that is engaging, different, interesting, and essentially not boring. Raph, I think those are four words that I would use to describe you.
Engaging, different, interesting, not boring. I love it.
Yeah, there we go. You know what? Big Pig Co. wanted to make content that people were clicking on because of the way that it was presented. And one of the reasons Big Pig was started was because they felt they could create content that wasn't traditional and therefore provided more value to their customers. So if you want videos, what do you want, Raph?
You want Big Pig Co. Let's go!
And we're back. Raph, we've been talking a lot about space movies, Star Wars. I mean, I don't know that you can recommend one of these 9 movies or 11 movies that we've all seen. So I'm hoping that maybe you can recommend something that is set in space that is well worth the time for people to go
my
watch.
My life is set in space. No, but I was going to recommend Galaxy Quest, but I was thinking, I think it was last year that, or no, 2 years ago, 2019, it came out, but no one watched it. Or whoever watched it just didn't care for it. It's James Gray's
Galaxy Quest, the
Alan Rickman's Sigourney Weaver film, which is a wonderful comedy that I think everyone should take a look at. But anyway, my reco for this week is James Gray's Ad Astra, which is Brad Pitt feature, which I think has one of his best performances, about a son trying to find his lost father in space. This is a film that I think a lot of people absolutely hated, or they just couldn't get into it because it's super slow and meandering. And I think that's the point of the movie, right?
Yeah.
I think the point of the film is, kind of focus on the philosophical and existential dread about our existence, right? And how we deal with the lack of purpose in our lives, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Ad Astra is one of those films that I think more people should see and give it a shot. Brad Pitt has a wonderful performance. And Tommy Lee Jones, in the 10 minutes he's in this film, he's still absolutely stunning. So that's my pick for this week. Ad Astra or Sad Astra or Dad Astra, whatever you want to call it.
As it's commonly known.
Don't do this. No, but check it out.
I will check it out. I have not seen it. I will just add real quick. Also go watch Spaceballs if you've not seen this hilarious parody on Star Wars.
Rick Moranis.
Yeah, for sure. And John Candy and Bill Pullman. Yeah, so go check it out.
Okay. Fine.
It's time for our hot takes. I'm going to go first because I don't really have too much to say. I was watching this HBO show, The Mayor of Easttown, and I saw somebody else was watching it complain about like somebody that had tweeted something from the episode as it was airing. And my take is that I think the expectation should be that there will be spoilers on Twitter of things. And so if you do not enjoy spoilers, if you have not seen something that you know will be out there, don't go on.
Yeah, man.
Mute the words that are related to that content. Yeah. Like unfollow people that are obviously watching the show and live tweeting it. But don't go on, get spoiled, and then complain about it. Because for better or worse, the way that we've set up Twitter specifically is for people to share their thoughts as they're happening, right? So it's like if I go to a concert and I'm like watching the Strokes and I'm like, I can't believe the Strokes played all. Is this it, right? Like, you know what I mean? I'm not going to wait for the concert to be over to share like what I thought yesterday, right? So the same thing should like if I'm watching the Oscars, I'm not going to wait until a week from now to say like, oh, yeah, I can't believe Glenn Close was dancing, doing the butt, right? Like, I have to, it's like in the moment. And the same thing about shows, like if you're watching the Game of Thrones finale or if you're watching the latest episode of Mayor of Easttown, like that's the moment to tweet out your thoughts. And so I understand people don't want to have shit spoiled for them, but the responsibility should be on you to figure that out. No, don't put that responsibility on other people.
Preach.
So that's my take. John, do you have a hot take this week?
I think movies are finished and we should talk about them like Shakespeare. And so I think that like it's a closed thing now, so we can talk about movies as in like what was the best movie of all time, because I don't think they're making movies anymore. Like, it's just not going to be the same. So I think that movies peaked at the part of The Dark Knight when the truck flipped over forwards. I think that is the culmination of movies, and it's never going to get any better than that moment when you were like, holy shit, that truck just flipped over for real, man. So how's that for a hot take?
So if we agree with that premise, then your favorite movie or the best movie, according to you, has to be out there already. So I would ask you, what is the best movie?
This is interesting. I think that Jurassic Park is the best movie.
Okay.
I don't know if it's necessarily like the most, like it's just the most put most together fun. Movie and it lasts. It's and it's like infinitely rewatchable.
Yeah. You know I don't what I mean? Understand how the CGI from that movie has not aged a fucking day, but things that have come out so much later look like shit. And I don't like, it boggles my mind. I mean, obviously like the triceratops is like a real thing, right? So that's always going to look fucking excellent.
Yeah.
But it's like when the raptors are fighting the T-Rex, like amazing. What's happening there? What type of magic? Like it blows my mind every time I think about
it. Yeah. Every time I turn it on, I'm worried that it's going to be look like crap, and this is going to be the one where finally see it, and it never does, you know.
No, I think Samuel L. Jackson looks worse than the CGI stuff. like he's aging worse.
No, it's no good.
Raph, bring us home. What's your hot take for the week?
My hot take is that posters need to make a comeback for movies and TV. And what I mean by that, it's a lot of the posters these days are very generic, and they're very like a good poster should have a tease, right? Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't just market the actor, but it should market the film entirely. And I want to bring a focus on what's it called? The Phantom Menace poster that they released. And it was Jake Lloyd or young Anakin just walking so sad, but his shadow is Darth Vader. And that's all you need to put on a poster. You don't even need to say anything. The moment you see that shadow of Darth Vader in the background, it's already as iconic as it could be. And everyone knows what that is going to entail, right? And I think a lot of the posters these days should have that punch, right? Even if it's not a cultural icon like Star Wars, you know, if you have an original feature, but it just shows one simple thing. So I think maybe it's a blend of minimalism and, having the artist understand the tone of that film and what the director wants to portray. An effective poster can even be as powerful as an effective trailer, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to bring more people to the movies. So yeah, I think more people should, some of the marketing team should focus on a good artist to develop these posters to market their films as a piece of art, but also as a film rather than, hey, Brad Pitt's in this movie. So go watch Brad Pitt. Right? You just don't want to have his face, right? Yeah, it's dad ass or whatever, right in the middle. But I forgot what I was going to say. So I'm going to end it right there.
I think I absolutely agree with you. Like every poster now is like every fucking character in the movie over like
heads,
orange and, you know, blue like and blue or purple, or it's like, it's nothing. Like, do put some fucking effort into telling a story with the poster. So I agree with you. I will endorse.
And if you have a character on like on the left side and another character on the right, but their names are switched apart, what the hell is that? So you have a Samuel L. Jackson on the left side and it's like, what's it called? I don't know. Give me an actor. Brad Pitt.
Eugene
and
then Brad
Pitt's on the other side. It's just, just put everyone's name right beside each other. Why do you have to make it confusing? I hate everyone.
I agree. I also agree with that one. You have some spot on takes when it comes to posters.
Thank you.
Guys, that's what we're going to call it for this week. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it with friends, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, you know, check us out and, and if you like our magazine, head over to layeredbutter.com and check out our latest issues. We have a Ghibli issue. You can pre-order a Bond issue, a modern horror issue. You know, if you know somebody that likes movies, they have not pre-ordered this magazine yet, do it for them. Send them the link. Be a good dude. And if you want to find us on social media, we are on Twitter at layered_butter. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/butter and on Instagram at layeredbutter. You can find me on all social media platforms at rcockting, rcockting. Raph, where can people find you?
Find me on Letterboxd, J Raphael, Rafael with a J in the front. Okay, cool.
Perfect. And John, where can people find you for all your Star Wars thoughts?
My thoughts. I'm at the stupid boy with two O's, stupid boy on Twitter, which is, I don't know, I'm schooled for it. You know what I mean?
Was the stupid boy with a U taken already, do you think?
No, I thought that was a stylish choice that I wanted to have when I was 15, you know? And yeah, that's right. That's right. And then I just plug your guys' podcast and magazines. I'm really proud of you guys. It's really cool, you know? I was thinking about it, and when you announced that it was called Layered Butter, I was very, very proud because I remember certifying you guys as popcorn experts at Empire Theaters, and you guys, I want you and Perucho as well, are like three of 50 people in the whole world that are officially certified as popcorn experts. Yeah. So I think that it made a lot of sense to be Layered Butter, you know?
For sure. It definitely, like, working at Empire Theaters has influenced all our lives, I think, in one way or another. So
big time.
I will just call out that they've been making, we shared a screen grab of the three of us together, and they've been saying that the theme of tonight is The Empire Strikes Back, which
brilliant.
That's what we're going to call it for this week. Make sure you guys check us out, and we'll see you next time.
See ya. Bye.